cursing has a long history, and its purposes have ranged from expressing anger, denigrating others, and oddly enough, connecting like-minded people together. From taboos to code words spoken with a wink, the wrong words in the wrong ears can generate harsh reactions from listeners, and possibly lawyers, lawmakers, regulators, and nowadays, social media. On the other hand, sometimes people find such words appealing, or at least acceptable. Why the divide? And under what circumstances is cursing useful? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. My challenge is to discuss what is rather sensitive topic. The foul language, profanity, cursing, it comes under many names. And I'm going to be doing it without actually using any foul language myself. It's something that I think is worth discussing, because of course it does have a long history. Taboo words have been with us for a long time. And certainly I can't think of my own military experience without being reminded about how, especially earlier in the early days of my career, cursing was rather commonplace. It seemed to serve kind of a purpose at that point. There was verbal beatdowns that could be issued to new recruits, which back in the earlier days, say, you know, the 1980s when I was going in, the use of curse words was one way of sort of harshening the language used for the purposes of effectively socialization, trying to dissociate a private from their past selves and get them into the mode of being in a harsh environment. There's also some social rituals associated with it, such as cadences. These cadence is used by military organizations to march people in unison, whether it's a walking march to move a unit from one place to another, or a form of song, which is used to help a unit while they're doing physical training to run together in cadence. The purpose of the song was to, you know, make sure that everybody landed with their left foot down at the same time on the beat. And as such, we were able to keep a common distance from each other so they weren't bumping into each other. However, some of the songs that were used when I first joined the service, some of them were not exactly clean lyrics. They were actually rather dirty, and they tended to be misogynistic, in fact. A whole class of cadences was known as Jodies, which, trying to, again, serve this socialization purpose. And Jodies, the name comes from a mythical character by the name of Jodi, who was a hypothetical person having an affair with a recruit's or a soldier's girl back home. As a way of dissociating or breaking the identity bond, the soldier is essentially reminded that they shouldn't worry about the girl because the girl's cheating anyway. There's this Jodi is there taking the soldier's place. Not a very pleasant thought, but in the earlier days, I mean, the language that was used in some of these Jodis was very, very coarse, very crude, as sort of like a shock mechanism, I suppose. The army sought to clean up the language as much later on when we started having co-ed units, and some of the use of the language was perhaps more offensive and not conducive to the type of socialization that the purpose of the cadences served. As I went through my own experience, I found that as I moved up the ranks and I moved up to, from tactical units to higher headquarters units, the whole culture of cursing evolved in a way. As I moved up, there was less of it, and it was less acceptable. It was, I believe, a combination of the overall organizational view, trying to avoid using offensive language when it really wasn't necessary. So cursing became less common. But there was also just the other aspect of that as I moved up to higher headquarters, and we had to do a lot more external work. I mean, higher headquarters tended to have a lot more engagements with the private sector, and there was sort of a an aura that, well, cursing just didn't have a place. It didn't present the army members as having a professional outlook. And so in that regard, you know, I heard it considerably less. And yet it was definitely present in more controlled environments without a whole lot of ears listening in. So I thought quite a bit about, you know, why couldn't it be just, you know, given up? Just, you know, just don't use words that are offensive. Use other words. It would seem simple. Of course, it's simple for me because I don't use that type of language. But in order to really understand this, I had to do a little bit of thinking and a little bit of research. And I came across several resources, but I'm going to highlight one only because it's an enjoyable read, and I think it's it really treats the subject very well. And this is a chapter out of a book from Steven Pinker, his book, The Stuff of Thought. And he devotes one chapter essentially to the origins and purposes and uses of curse words. What he did was he came up with sort of five uses. And let me just kind of run through the list. One of them, I already kind of gave an example, the abusive swearing, which in particular is intended to offend or intimidate somebody, essentially to cause emotional change. And if there's probably no finer example of this than, you know, albeit fiction, the scenes with the drill sergeant in the Stanley Kubrick movie Full Metal Jacket, where the drill sergeant is just using all sorts of offensive language, trying to wear down and motivate the new recruits in his midst. The second category is cathartic swearing, which is used we hurt ourselves or we experience some sudden misfortune, and we just yell out an expletive because it's just we're so mad or shaken up that it just it's the way to release tension. And okay, so this is probably the type that if and when I do use swear words, that's the type I fall victim to. The third category that Pinker uses it's kind of a funny word. It's dysphemistic. Now, you all know what a euphemism is, where you essentially come up with a pleasant sounding thing to make something sound good. Okay? Well, a dysphemism is the opposite. A dysphemism conveys a negative impression of the subject, and it's to convince a listener of the negativity associated with the subject. I'll give you a couple of clean versions of dysphemism so you understand what I mean. And these definitely come from my military experience. We think about a headquarters. And when I'm saying a headquarters, I'm talking about a headquarters that is far removed from, if you're working in a tactical organization, the headquarters is filled with much higher ranking people. And as a way of sort of denigrating the idea of the headquarters, because about the only thing that people think about these headquarters doing is issuing inane taskers and stuff like that. So there's all these dysphemisms that come out, such as calling the headquarters the headshed or the flagpole. Such as, for example, general officers have their own personal flag. The Pentagon is also known as the Puzzle Palace. Now, racial and gender epithets are examples of dysphemisms. Okay, the fourth category is emphatic swearing, which is intended to draw attention to something. In my experience, this is the sort of thing that happens when the boss gets angry. And I mean really angry. Where, in essence, let's say that you're in an organization, the boss has realized he issued some sort of a tasker or requirement to the staff. The staff either dropped the ball, failed to accomplish the task, or they did it so incompetently that the boss, who doesn't have a lot of time in the first place, just basically blows a gasket and starts cursing in order to draw attention to the fact that the staff has got to get its act together, perform the task as directed, and move on. The last one is idiomatic swearing, which is a sign that the conversation or that the setting, the situation, is intended to be informal. What I talk about, say, if I'm in a higher headquarters or when I've been in a higher headquarters and I've heard cursing being used sort of in an underground fashion, I kind of think of two things. There is informality. There's a desire to try to take the veneer off and just sort of relax a bit and kind of sort of be oneself with just their close friends, such that, you know, as they use the words, they don't offend other people. They keep the conversation somewhat private. The other is, I think, a form of disidentification. Consider yourself as, say, you're sort of accustomed to a particular environment. You may not even use cursing, but you then find yourself in an environment where you really are uncomfortable. And, you know, it's a little bit more politically oriented or something different than what you're used to. You start to change your language as a way of marking down that I may be an officer, but this ain't me. This environment is not me. What I'm doing is not me. I just repudiate it, but I'm going to play along with it as much as I can until I can get the heck out of here. So this is something that's sort of like good, bad, especially given, you know, supposedly the increased coarseness of language in society. There's a few questions that sort of I wrestle with. You know, one of them has to do with culture and identity. And this kind of gets into the socialization aspect. It was definitely tolerated a long time ago. As a matter of fact, it was very much, in a lot of ways, it was encouraged. It was felt that cursing served the purpose to knock people out of their complacency and be receptive to their new identity as a member of an organization. Obviously, other organization identities, those that perhaps take a form of a very tight professional view, which would shun the use of such language, is very different. I mean, you know, so you can move from one organization to another where the choice of the organization as to what tolerance they have for profanity as a way of signaling what is acceptable acts by members is something that I think, you know, really is up to the organization to determine, especially when it's organizations that can control their own environments. But then there's sort of the other aspect, which is the leader and the leader setting the organizational climate, which I would suggest means that the leader almost has to take a more conservative approach to language than the membership. So when I talk about leadership and climate, I'm reminded of what happened in a battalion that I served in very early in my career, in which there were two different commanders. The first one, he was a gentleman, and he was he could curse like a sailor on rare occasions, but he usually kept his temper. He was cautious with his language. He was very much a family oriented type of a commander. And then and the climate was very strong. They loved him. The members were their performance was good. They were very, very professional. And then the commander was replaced with someone who was a very open misogynist. And the language that the leader used was vastly different. It wasn't always profanity in the traditional sense, but the meanings behind the words that were used when it wasn't profane was still profane in thought. And it struck me that as I watched for the remaining 9 months in which I was there, I watched how the tone of the organization, the climate of the organization changed, where foul language became more acceptable, and it ultimately translated into increase in marital problems, increases in divorces and separations, and also other episodes of indiscipline that it's not the sort of a thing, you know, from one person's perspective you can say is entirely causal. But what I can say is that if that sort of behavior were to be seen, say, nowadays, because this happened a long time ago, I don't think the commander would have been around very long. He would have been accused of harboring a hostile leadership climate. But as it were, that was what I experienced early in my career. So, you know, it kind of gets to one of the important things that I think, whether or not cursing serves a purpose, I think that one of the things we have to keep in mind is that because of its intention or to offend or to shake things up, it's really, really hard when you're talking about inclusive settings to find a place for that type of language. It is inherently divisive, which is, I find fascinating, because some of the organizations in which I saw cursing used often were organizations that in which inclusion was one of their claims of central character, to invoke Albert and Wetton's organizational identity. So it's sort of interesting because, you know, you would think that, you know, there would be a, you know, again, a lever that says, you know, we shouldn't be speaking this way, but in these particular circumstances, if we want to be inclusive. And yet we don't. I think that does get into some sense of a innate tendency to want to be provocative or something in that regard, that was causing the people to think that it was okay, that in order to establish an inclusive environment, we had to be provocative in some way. But the last one, which really gets to, you know, one of the times in which perhaps it is beneficial to a limited extent, at least in the historical example that I gave earlier, was transformational change. And I'm not talking about large-scale transformations. I'm talking about small-scale, really. Changing, you know, the socialization aspect, and also the aspect of trying to spur a organization into action because they allowed something unacceptable or allowed some crisis to happen. And I think, you know, that's one of those things where as long as the words are used only judiciously, specific for the purpose of spurring action, then I would say that there's a point in which we can perhaps forgive the use. As long as, like, let's say that the speaker does so, but does so apologetically. That is, that the circumstances drove the need to use such language, as opposed to it being entirely of the volition of the individual. And the final point, though, is, and this is also something I mentioned social media before, but this is one of the things that I think really is driving us to say that we've got to find ways to clean our language and avoid coarseness. And this is because of social media. I think this is one of those things that's sort of here to stay. We know that anything we say can be used out of context, especially if it is recorded. And the potential for one's words, even in private conversation, being recorded, we almost have to assume that that's a potential. So in a lot of ways, it kind of surprises me when I see, like on social media platforms, people just openly using writing curse words. Because even though there's the veneer of anonymity in a lot of these platforms, ultimately, that can go away. There's ways to trace. And eventually, I think it will come to the point where authentication of a communication is going to become a bit more important. But even just, you know, recording of casual conversations in which expletives are used can actually come back and be rather damaging to the individual. And, you know, it's in sort of a gotcha fashion. It can appear months, years later. And unfortunately, because of the nature of social media, it becomes a permanent part of the record. I think we really do have to think really, really hard about how we use taboo words, taboo ideas, because, you know, it ultimately, maybe it served a purpose before, maybe as a way of staking one's claim. But nowadays, it may not be worth the risk, and that trying to stick with cleaner language would seem to be much more amenable or much more in tune or aligned how we would want our organizations to be. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening and have a great day.